hopefully I'll get to know you all well soon. So for quite a number of years, predating pretty much everybody, except for my friend here, I've been giving shiurim on Agadata, called Agadata Be'in, and you know that I published a book on the subject, which in many ways grew out of the shiurim I gave here. I have a second volume, which is coming out at the publisher. It should be out in a couple of months, I hope, although that's what they keep on telling me, but I sent it in like a year or two ago, and I'd like to work on a third volume. So the shiurim and the discussions we have are definitely valuable, I hope, to me, and I hope to you too. My overall hypothesis, you might say, in learning Agadata Be'in is that it's a sugya like any other sugya in Ch'as. Just like you are medayik in every, you know, word and every phrase, and you ask questions of the Gemara or the Rashi or whatever you're learning, and you really tackle it seriously. The same applies to Agadata, because it is no less a part of Ch'as than any other sugya that you learn. Now the tools that you bring to bear in analyzing an Agadata, using that same basic derech of every word, every meaning, every nuance, everything working on, the tools are a little different. And so in explaining a narrative, which is what we're doing, it's a sipur agadah in Hebrew, it's a story, in explaining it, you know, so when you learn a sugya and whatever you're learning, what sugya are you learning now, condition? Yeah. What's that?
So,
what's that?
Bottom.
So what sugya is it?
Kedushin
B'milveh.
Okay, so you bring to bear certain understandings you have of how Havah works and how Kinyan works as you try to figure out that sugya. So when you're dealing with agadic narratives and stories, you need to bring other resources to bear, not purely halachic, but a knowledge of human nature, some knowledge of the context within which the Agada was written, who wrote it, how it was written. So you bring to bear other factors, but whatever you're bringing to bear, it's basically, let's learn the Gemara really seriously and try to figure it out. And another one of my assumptions is that every word was written with care. That was written by the same Amoraim who appeared in any part of Ch'as, and it has an important lesson or message to teach us. Halachic sugis halacha, agadic sugis about broader questions about what it is to be a human being and the nature of temptation, and which is what we're going to kind of deal with, the nature of your own moral integrity and your own honesty, raises lots of important questions that are, I think, fundamental to the human condition. So I was drawn to this because in college I minored in literature, so there's obviously a continuation. Some of you have taken my courses, and these are stories, so I kind of always was interested in stories, always love to read. But I love learning, and so I kind of combine the two into taking a special interest in learning Agadata Be'in, narrative Agadata Be'in in particular. And so we'll have to try to figure it out. And there are lots of questions that should be asked about any, agadic narrative, any sugya, and so we'll discuss the questions and see where we go. I will just conclude this little introduction by saying that I have given many dozens of shiurim and agadata over the years at Lander, basically before you got here mostly, and then it was interrupted by COVID and my parents' illness and whatever, and I don't think ever failed to learn something from the guys who are assembled around the table. You will see things. I may have learned this Gemara 20 times, but you will see something that I won't see. I didn't see. It's just the way it is, because we all have different perspectives and you're all coming at it with fresh eyes. So I never fail to learn something. And that's really quite an amazing thing if you think about it, but it's totally true. And before I write up the chapters in my book, these are all recorded, so I listen to the recording. And I hear this guy say that question, this guy, and that guy, that kind of comes back to life again as I hear the shiur and the discussions and the conversations we have. And some of the ideas that I got are in the book. I don't remember who said what, but they're part of the conversation. So I absolutely welcome and desire your input. There aren't necessarily hard and fast answers to any of these things. So I chose this sugya because you're learning Maseches Kedushin. Any of you here participate in the Asura Yuchsin challenge during Bena? Right. So, if you did you finish?
Yeah.
Okay, so you have learned this Gemara. There, at the end of Asar Yuchsin, there are a number of Agaditas, some pretty troubling, if you've read them. This is a little less troubling, but some are quite troubling. And I did record a shiur on an earlier Agadita. If you're interested, I can recapitulate that shiur next time we get together, if you didn't hear it online or you didn't pay attention to it. Really troubling Agadita. The Agadita we're going to look at today is not as disturbing because it doesn't deal with somebody who is well known, or like a Tana or an Amora. When you have an Agadita that says Rabbi Akiva almost couldn't resist the temptation of a pretty woman, that's pretty troubling, because it's Rabbi Akiva or a mayor. This is about a man whose name is Plimo, nobody famous. He appears, as far as I know, only here in Shas. You know what they say, just because not everybody who lived during the medieval period was a Rishon. Not everybody who lived during the period of the Amoraim or the Tanaim was an Amora or Tana. So now he had certain qualities, positive qualities, no question about it, but he was not of that stature. So what we read about him is not going to like shake us up, so to speak. It's a little bit more neutral in that respect. It's a very interesting Agadita, I think. If you learned it, you may remember it. You might reflect about to what extent this is a literal story. The story that we're about to learn, did it actually literally happen? Which is definitely a possibility. And there's a whole Masorah of interpretation of Agadic narratives which insist on their literalness, and that's fine. If that's your view, that's fine with me. Or you could take it to be allegorical. You know what an allegory is? It's a story in which various characters are put together to teach us a moral lesson. It may not reflect an historical reality, but it was written by a great, in this case it would be whoever wrote the Gemara, but together the Gemara wrote a story which he felt was an important lesson for all of us. Now, the fact that the Gemara recorded it, even if it was historical, means that whoever decided to include it in the Gemara, the Misadre Hashas, they thought it was important too. So in any case, it's important that it's there to teach us a lesson. I do not agree with those people who think that there are some stories that are just there for entertainment purposes or just because Chazal were telling stories. I think everything in the Gemara has significance, weight, meaning, and it's designed to teach us something, and it's our job to figure that out. Okay, so you can take it literally, you cannot take it literally, whatever you want, it's fine with me, but let's learn the Gemara. So it starts with where the arrow is. See it? Okay, so Plimo have a rogil lemeimer kol yoma gira be'enei desatan. Plimo used to say on a daily basis, every day, an arrow in the eye of the satan. So who was Plimo? We don't know anything about him. It just so happens that the word Plimo is similar to a Greek word, and then, you know, Greek was the lingua franca of some Jews at that time. You know, a lot of Greek words in Gemara. Plimo is related to the word polemos or polemical, which means polemical. What does that mean? You need a Bulgarian to tell you what an English word means? What is this? What does it mean? What does polemical mean? Shmuel, help us out.
Argumentative.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So he could be like this, maybe some kind of argumentative guy. But he was kind of argumentative with the Yetzirah, with the Satan. Now, who was the Satan? So Rashi, this is in the Gemara before, says, uses the word Satan. He says it's the second line from the last, where the wines start getting wide. And Rashi, the second line, Duhu Yetzirah. Rashi identifies the Satan with the Yetzirah. And so what Plimo was doing was basically challenging the Yetzirah. An arrow in your eye! You can't best me. I am the master of my frumkite. There's no way you can get to me. An arrow in your eye! Okay? What kind of person would say that, do you think? How would you characterize such... What? Good, yes. Overconfident? Yeah, for sure. That's what we're going to find out soon enough. But yes, what else?
A zealous person.
What's that?
Zealous.
Zealous in what way?
Like a kanai kind of guy.
Okay, kanai with respect to the Yetzirah. I think you might say he was a chutzpahdik. chutzpah nyak, as they say in Yiddish. He was full of chutzpah, right? I mean, it's chutzpah dick to say the Eitzahara. He is basically dissing the Eitzahara. You have no control. You're a zero. You're nothing. I'm shooting arrows in your eyes. So it's really hubris. Who knows what hubris is?
Ego.
Yeah, hubris is somebody. So those of you who took my course, we talk hubris. Hubris is like great chutzpah. He's like breaking the boundaries. There are boundaries. There's the Eitzahara. There's a person. The Eitzahara can be pretty subversive to a human beings. And he is like breaking those boundaries, and he's like shooting his eye and the arrow of the Eitzahara, and it's just like, you are a zero. You have no control over me. That's hubris. That's chutzpah. That's brazen. It's over self-confident, to use your term, which is a good term. Why the eyes? Why not the heart?
Blinds you, I don't know.
What's that?
Blinds you. Can't see anything. You're useless to your eyes.
And therefore?
Eitzahara is useless.
Good. It's a way of neutering the Yetzirah. If you think of the Yetzirah as kind of looking at you and leading you as it looks at you down the path of temptation, if you blind the Yetzirah, he can't do the job. So I think that's correct. The Marsha has a slightly different interpretation. He says that the eyes are sursure avera. You know what that means? They are, Sirsur is a broker. They are brokers of Avera. In other words, we are often, Lo Sasuru Achare, Levavkem Viachare, Henecha, right? Eyes can lead you astray. Shmira Sainayim, we know all about that. So, because eyes are so provocative and tempting, he was going to shoot the arrow in the eye of the Yetzirah. These are two different readings, the Marsha's reading and the one we developed here in the shir. Either way, that's what he said. Now, there is a teaching in the Gemara, Al Tiftach Peh LaSata. You ever hear that? I think it's a Gemara in Brachas. What does that mean? Like, don't aggravate the Yetzirah. Like, let it lie quietly under the carpet. If you aggravate it, then what might it do? It might attack, like an animal. If you think of it as the Yetzirah, is like, it's an animal that can attack. If you annoy it, it might attack you. The Maral says that being Megara the Yetzirah is the worst thing you can do for the Yetzirah. It provokes it. By provoking the Yetzirah, it is more aggressive in attacking it. That's the Maral. Why do you think that is psychologically? What do you think the psychology might be of that idea? The Maral says, which I was alluding to earlier, that if you're Megara the Yetzirah, if you provoke the Yetzirah, if you kind of annoy it, then it comes out from under the carpet of your sin and attacks you even more vehemently. What do you think might be the reason for that, psychologically?
Defense mechanism.
Meaning?
Defense, meaning I guess, kind of like a human, pardon me, when a human gets insulted, then they, you know, feel more feelings towards that person.
Good. But explain this as the Yetzirah. In other words, if you personify the Yetzirah as a satan, if you personify it, if you treat the Yetzirah as if it were a person, like a satan, well, then if you annoy the satan, then just like if you annoy your boss might fire you. If you annoy your wife, she might get annoyed at you and be angry at you. You don't want to annoy people. That's the personification. I'm asking you, if it's the Yetzirah, by the way, the Agadita will personify the Sutton. He becomes an actor in this whole drama, as we'll see. But if you think of it psychologically, and like Rashi says, Sutton's Yetzirah, well, yes?
We're not supposed to be overconfident that, oh, the Yetzirah is below me. It's never going to, you know, that's never going to happen to me.
So why is the Megara, right? So why does it make it worse? Explain to me what the mechanism is for why it makes it worse. I hear what you're saying, and it makes sense. But what's the mechanism?
You're not aware. You're not careful.
Good. You're not acknowledging its force. We have a Yetzirah. We all know. We all struggle. Every single human being struggles with the Yetzirah. So if you don't acknowledge the force by kind of discrediting it or dissing it, then you're not going to be able to confront its true power. Let's say if somebody's fighting in a war. If you don't accurately assess the, you know, Hamas, let's say, if you don't accurately assess the military techniques and power of Hamas, that, and you become too self-satisfied, then you may get beaten in war. The same thing is true with our own inner inclinations. If we don't acknowledge them, address them, and recognize their power, then they become more effective in attacking us. And by being megara the Yetzer Hara, that is proactively asserting that it has no power over you. And that's really dangerous. So that would be, I think, a psychological explanation, or an explanation for the psychological mechanism underlying the Maharal's thesis. Okay, so that's what happens. Now the story continues. That was just the background. Yom Achad, Ma'ale Yoma de Kippurah Hava. One day it was Erev Yom Kippur. Now, what are Jews typically doing right before Yom Kippur?
Eating.
Yes, eating this Udah HaMafsekes, and that's the mise-en-scene, to use a fancy French word. That's the scene here. The scene is, this is the Udah HaMafsekes. One day, it's Erev Yom Kippur. Idmi le'ka'anya. And the Satan, have a seat. Source is over there. The Satan takes on the guise of a poor person coming begging at the door. So now the Sutton is truly personified, right? It becomes an Ani. So if you interpret this literally, then there's some kind of supernatural phenomenon where the Yetzer Hara becomes actually, or the Sutton becomes like a Malach, or visiting Avraham Avinu. If you take this to be an allegory, a mashal, an allegory is a mashal, if you take this to be a mashal, then it's the author of this Agadata, a way of conveying some really important moral lessons to us through a story. By the way, why would somebody convey a moral lesson through a story rather than just telling us the moral lesson?
It's more relatable.
What?
It's more relatable.
Good, more relatable. Any other reasons? That's absolutely right. I agree with that.
It allows you to see, like, in the context of human behavior and human action.
Good. People remember stories a lot better than they remember preaching. You can get a Musa Shmooze, and if the Musa Shmooze is just like, hey, be good, and be good, okay, you kind of forget that pretty quickly. I mean, you shouldn't, but you do. But a story, this is a really interesting story. I mean, this guy, Plimo, ends up, you know, in the urinal. You know, it's like a really interesting story, so you'll remember it. And you know, they're living characters, and you identify with them. Oh, am I like Plimo? Am I not like Plimo? Am I different? Am I better? Am I worse? You know, it has a lot of power, which is why if you look at the Torah, you will find far more of the Torah has stories than it has halachas. You know, Chazal say that tilei tilei mshal halachas are, you know, a little, but it's full of the, you know, the sichas and shal avdei avos, a lot more type, because the Torah, being written by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he knew how best to reach us. If the Torah were a book of philosophy, it would have long been gone out of fashion. Nobody would pay attention. How many people read books of philosophy? Being a philosopher, I think that not too many, unfortunately. That's sad, but that's the way it is. But the Torah, and as Hashem understood, being Hashem, how best to reach human beings, and the stories of the Torah have eternal significance. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's storytelling, which is very, very important for us to learn. So that's why an author would choose a story, and in fact, you probably remember a lot of the stories you read, more so than you may have remembered some abstract or whatever. Okay, anyway, so the story continues. Asa kara abava. This poor person comes to the door, the gate, begging for money. Anybody ever had this at home? I don't know. I live in Brooklyn, where we get people coming to the door all the time asking for money. Does it happen where you guys live?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Where do you live?
Baltimore.
So it's either Brooklyn or Baltimore.
Huh?
Brooklyn or Baltimore. No? Okay. Yeah, suburb is probably not too common, but okay, happens all the time. When I first moved into my block, it was mostly non-Jews, because that was the only house I could afford. Eventually it became like the Gerer block, like most of the people in my block are Gerer Hasidim. Like, we kind of don't fit in very much anymore. So we get a lot of people coming for money, because it's like a Gerer block. Anyway, so he came, Afikule Rivka, Rivka. So he came to the door, he was a beggar, a poor person, so they brought out some bread to him. What didn't they do?
Invite him in.
Amale. Yoma kia idna kule amagavai vana abrai? A day like today, everybody's sitting inside with their family, eating the, what? Suda mafsekes. And you expect me to stay outside? So he's a pretty forward, aggressive kind of Ani, as the Satan, who's taken that guise. And he objects. So let's look at the scene. So the scene is, this is our Suda mafsekes, the table, right? You're all sitting here. Geschmack of food, great food. I mean, Suda mafsekes. So it's a really warm meal. Now, I imagine a plimo sitting around, person that probably of some means, especially if he has a Greek name, probably of some means, you know, very frum, no question, like, you know, the Yetzirah could never get me, right? So at least at some level, he's pretty frum. I imagine his family's around him. It's warm inside. Everybody's enjoying the family experience and the warmth and the meal. And Plimo's probably thinking, me, Shuva on Yom Kippur? I'm a good guy. I mean, I really don't have to do much Shuva. Gira be'enei de sedna. I mean, I'm fine. You're like, you know, I'm a pretty good guy. So he's probably approaching Yom Kippur with a lot of self-confidence about his own frumkeit, his own being deserving of a good Yom Kippur. So it's a warm, close family scene, and everybody's feeling good about themselves. They have food, they have resources, they have family support. It's kind of emotionally warm. They're kind of confident before Yom Kippur because they're, you know, Balei Tzedakah, and he davens well, and he learns well, whatever. And then this Ani comes to the door, and he shatters that inner sanctum. He penetrates on the outside. He's this Ani. And they're nice inside, comfortable family, and he penetrates. What happens? He criticized them. And the story continues. It's really so interesting. Let me read a little bit more. Okay. So he says, bring me inside. So he says, so he said, right? I lay the krivule rifta. They brought him inside the house and they gave him some bread. Where is he stationed at the moment? He's in the house, but is he at the table? No. Yeah, not yet. They just invited him, so he came from the outside to the inside. This, by the way, happened. A guy comes collecting. So usually I will invite him to come inside while I go find some money to give him. But that's all they did. They just invited him inside. So the guy says, Amale yomakya inna kule alma atacha vana luchudai? Everybody sits at the table. Suda mafsekes. And I'm sitting out there in the hallway. So again he attacks. And what's the message? The message is, Plimo, you're a pretentious, pious fool. You think you're from, you think you're a big tzaddik, gira be'ene de sitna, when in fact, there's nothing to you. In other words, if you were a seriously from person, you would have immediately invited me inside, in a warmth, sat me down at the table, I'm a poor person, given me some food. You just like a little, you just shove some food out, here, which is not very nice. You really should invite somebody in. And then you invite him in finally after he criticized you, but he's still at the door. Then finally after he criticizes you, he brings you to the table. What does it tell you about Plimo the person? That his inner self is not as from as his outer self, which is to say that he is pretentious. He is superficially pious, but not seriously from. And this ends up being a searing critique, to my mind, as the story unfolds, of people who are pretentious in their frumkeit, but there's nothing there other than their pretentiousness. You with me? And that's what we see with Plimo, and the story continues. So they bring him to the table. Asyuha osvuhu atacha. They put him at the table. Now this if you didn't learn this Gemara, this gets weirder and weirder. Hava Yosef Malay Navsha Shichna Vichibe. He was sitting at the table and he filled himself up with boils. Gross. The guy looked, you imagine these superating boils overflowing with pus. And he's, now there's this nice family, they're all dressed up for Yom Kippur, they're eating this delicious meal, and it's a sekes, they're about to go to shul, and this gross guy comes in, and he sits at the table, and he has these lesions that are oozing pus all over his body. Vahava kavod be'mili demas, he's going like this, he's scratching himself, like they're, it's grossing everybody out. By the way, it would gross me out. I think it would gross everybody out. What's the difference between us and Plimo? If it grosses us out, certainly grossing him out, which they tell him, they say, Amalei, they tell him, just turn it to the page, Amalei, Tiv Shapir, sit nicely, you're at the table. So what, we would probably get grossed out too. What's the difference between us and Plimo? What? Okay, Arab Yom Kippur. What?
We know we are terrible people.
Well, exactly right. No, you got it exactly right. He was Gira Be'ene Desitna. He's the guy who made believe that he is really a good guy. Oh, the Yetzer could never get me. We would all be grossed out. I don't blame him for being grossed out. What I blame him for is making believe he's a tzaddik and then getting grossed out. If you're a real tzaddik, don't get grossed out. If you're a real tzaddik, then be nice to a poor person. I wouldn't be so nice. I don't know about you. If I saw a gross guy at the door begging for money, I would not, I mean, eschata ayani maskir hayom, I'm being honest, I would get grossed out. I would not be able to do this. But one thing I can assure you about myself is that I would never say gira be'ene desitna. So, okay, you know, if you want to be an average guy, okay. But if you want to hold yourself up as a paragon of frumkeit, the standards are different. The story continues. It gets even more surprising. Amalahu, Amalei, he said to Plimo, Havolei Kasa. But he's annoying. He's not just gross. Look how aggressive he is. Give me this. Give me that. How could I sit outside? I should sit at the table. Give me food. Give me drink. You know, so he's very, the guy isn't just gross. He's truly annoying. I mean, who would be nice to a guy like that? I mean, I don't think I would. So, okay. Yavolei Kasa. So they give him a cup to drink. So what does he do? Ichmar Sada Be Kicho. Nachum. He spits up phlegm in the coast. They give him a cup of wine or whatever, and he goes, you know, he spits up phlegm. So he has boils all over his body, oozing pus, spitting up phlegm at the table. I mean, is that not gross? It's so gross that it's comical. And there's a comical element to this. It's like you're all smiling because it's really comical. So either this historically happened, you can take that view, or this is a part of the art of the person who wrote this Agadita, that he's really doing a great job of conveying the tension here. So what happens? Nacharube, they get angry at him. What does he do? Shaka umes. He takes himself and dies. So there's something, he goes like, drops dead on the floor. You can't make this up, right? I mean, except unless you're the person who made this up or whatever. It's like amazing. So he dies, right? He's like, right on the floor, Erev Yom Kippur, the guy dies. So what is Plimo obligated to do? They bury. It's May Smitzer, right? He's obligated to bury him. But that's not what he does. What he does is, the story continues. Shamu, they heard, Dahava Amre, people were saying in the neighborhood, Plimo Katal Gavra, Plimo Katal Gavra. Word got out that they heard people saying that Plimo's a murderer. Twice. So what does he do? Arak Vitasha Nafshe Bebes Hakise. He escapes and hides in the latrine. Told you that's where he ends up, in the bathroom. So there's a mitzvah of meis mitzvah. So what happened to his frumkeit?
You could say that he was worried for his life.
Right. But yeah, that's true. But they're not yet coming, so maybe you should have quickly buried him and then run away. Yes?
Verifying his reputation?
Excuse me?
Verifying his reputation?
Good! Why doesn't he say, yes, you're absolutely right. Why doesn't he say he ran away because he killed a person or because the police, you know, were going to come or something, as you said, which is a reasonable concern. That's what Rashi says. If you look at Orak Plimo Kosover Shabayim Alav Nokshe Hamelech Lahargo people. So if it's a true sakana defashas for himself, he got to escape. But you could also quickly buried him, or somebody could have buried him, or something. Like, it's like they totally ignored him. And he's really worried about what people are saying. Now, why isn't he worried? Hey, it's Erev of Yom Kippur. I killed a guy. Like, that's not a good way to go to Yom Kippur. Okay, it's one thing if, you know, you cut your fingernails in the wrong way before Yom Kippur, you know, you didn't cut the right order in the Shulchan Aruch, okay, you know, you get a little worried. But he thought he killed somebody. So you might think that his first concern would be, it's Erev Yom Kippur, I killed somebody. Like, he's worried about either the Nokshe HaMelech or his shame or his embarrassment. He's got his values, like, totally misplaced. Yes?
I guess a question or a critique is, why was it on this point that he failed, but when this person dressed as a poor person was at his table, he didn't fail when he was, you know, scratching himself. He didn't say leave. He just asked him to stop, but it was on the point. The second that people started worrying about him, you know,
he did tell the guy to stop acting like...
Yeah, but it's not, there are plenty of things that he could have done that are much worse, like kick him out or, you know...
Right, it's a very good point. Why didn't he kick him out? It's a very, very good point. What's your name again?
Zeb.
What's a very good... Why didn't he kick him out?
He can't.
Why?
His family is going to see him kicking out.
What's that?
His family is going to see him kicking the poor person out.
Okay, yes.
It's also for a Baal Bais to... A guest has to listen to whatever the Baal Bais says, except when it comes to telling him to leave. So Baal Bais is actually also for
Yeah, maybe Plimo was a Chatam and Chacham. He knew that. Yeah, that's possible. But I think he was caught between his self-image and his reality. His self-image was, I'm a good guy. So to kick him out would have been inconsistent with his self-image. So he had to let him stay, but he was really an unhappy camper. If his self-image were, in fact, accurately reflected his true inner status, then he would have been a tzaddik, like Moshe Feinstein or, you know, Rav Yashiv or somebody, and they, you know, let him in, invite him in, gross, who cares, he's a poor person, he's suffering, if he were a true tzaddik. Which, by the way, I certainly am not. I would have been grossed out. But he thinks of himself as a true tzaddik. So he can't kick him out entirely. He's got to, like, let him stay in, but he's still grossed out.
Maybe
yes.
The reason he didn't kick him out is because he didn't want people to see that he kicked someone out, and it was bad for him, again, with the public image idea.
That may be also a part of it, yes. Okay, good. Good point. Yes, that's probably also part of it, yes.
Is it like a righteousness that we're trying to achieve to not get grossed out by gross things? Like, why is that a bad thing, I guess what I'm asking?
It's not a bad thing unless you are a Gira Be'enei Desitna guy. In other words, the average person would be grossed out, except that you can't say, claim yourself to be this enormous tzaddik and then get grossed out. That's wrong. In other words, if you really are Gira Be'enei Desitna guy and you have no Yetzirah, then, you know, the person doesn't need a meal before Yom Kippur. He doesn't need to be a part of the family. Everybody needs that. So if you're a real tzaddik, that's the problem. That's the nub of the problem. It's not like the Gemara is being critical of the average person, but Klimo is claiming to be better than average, or claiming to be a tzaddik, and that is the ultimate flaw. We should be honest. This is really the message. We should be honest about our madrega. We should be self-critical, self-aware. We shouldn't think of ourselves, I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning to learn a daf yomi, so I'm a tzaddik. Maybe you are, but what are you really? What the Yetzer Hara is doing is testing Plimo. He's trying to show Plimo that your self-image is not accurate. And he's doing it in the most grossest, most vivid way, a way that you, as having learned the Sakata, will never forget, because it's like really bizarre. But that's how he is vividly showing Plimo his failures. Yes?
If he really cared so much about his self-image, why did he run away when the Ani died? They're supposed to just bury him and saying, I didn't kill him. Something must have happened internally that caused him to pass.
He just gave in to his fear, according to Rashi, that it might be rest, or he's afraid of the shame, so he just, like, escaped out of the shame, I guess. Yes? I have two quick questions. I want to go ahead.
Yeah,
you have to go to Shear, so
yeah,
I don't want to get
that.
That clock is not quite right.
So the problem is not that he was grossed out, but the actions that followed that. So that he didn't let the guy in, or that he said to Tid Shaper.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. Yes.
Good question. But he didn't actually kill this poor person. So I don't understand why. You're saying that he should care more about the fact that he killed someone, but he didn't kill anyone. It was an unfortunate scenario where he just died.
Right. So I hear that point. Why would people be saying that he killed him if he, in fact, actually didn't kill him? And it could be that if somebody is in an extremely physically deprived state and is very sick because he's got boils all over the place and he's got phlegm, that if you yell at him, that could lead to his death. In other words, a person can be so shocked and disturbed. Let's imagine this were a real Ani who was really poor. And by the way, there was no social safety net in those days. I mean, to be really poor is not to have enough bread to eat for Yom Kippur, Erev Yom Kippur. He had nothing. So if he were a real Ani, he would have been really sick. He was physically ill. He had boils all over the place. He had a bad cough. He was really sick. So if he were attacked, I could see that could actually end up killing a real person. Okay, so he runs. So why the basic hisei? Why the latrine? Like, couldn't he run into the forest or the woods? Or why Davka there? Yes.
Because it's far away from the general population, as it usually is found in Tzadik Marm.
Okay, but he could have just run into the woods. Why Davka to the basic hisei?
I was there to...
No, who's in the woods? Who's in the woods, especially Erev Yom Kippur? I mean, who's in the... No, nobody's there.
I'm saying it's him like on...
So
the question would be on the cave.
Okay, why didn't he go to a cave? So I think that, as I told you, I believe that every word, everything has great significance. It's not happenstance. If you think about it, where should he have been going to?
Shul.
It's Yom Kippur. Where does he end up? In the latrine. The latrine is the exact perfect antithesis, mirror image of where he should be. He's a shul guy. Gira be'enei desidna. But what the story is telling us is that he's really not a shul guy. He's really a beis hakisei guy, making believe he's a shul guy. And running to the beis hakisei is a way of the author of the Agadata conveying vividly to us the true inner status of Plimo. He belongs in the John. Doesn't belong in shul, because he's not a shul guy, even though he has pretensions of being, you know, the Mizrach side, sitting up near the, you know, the chashuvim. That's not where he belongs. He really belongs there, and that is the most, you know, of all of our human components, that is the most animalistic, the most self-centered. That's like, you know, that's pure physicality, and that's where he is. That's who he is. He's not this great neshama gira be'ena desitna. He's just belongs in the Beis HaKisei, not in the shul. He is kind of vividly demonstrating to him that he is kind of nowhere near what he is. It's a kind of an ironic reversal. He ends up ironically reversed from being a shul guy to being in the latrine. And by the way, the Gemara, I don't know if you've seen these Gemaras, the Gemara says that Shadim hang around the Beis HaKisei. You know, at least then, I don't know about now. Probably not in fancy Beis HaKisei, you know, Trump's gold-plated toilet seat. You know, probably not there. But in those days, it was not exactly the... you've ever gone hiking? Anybody here do any hiking? Okay, if you ever go to some of these outdoor places in the middle of the woods where you can relieve yourself, not a pretty picture. I can see where Shadim are. So he ends up, he's making fun of the Satan, and that's where he belongs, where the Shadim hang out. So... what happens next is, and I'm kind of want to finish the Agadata, Azal Basre. The Sutton follows him. He shows up in the latrine. Now, what does Plimo think about the Sutton? He's dead. What is a dead person doing chasing me into the Pesachisa? Can you imagine the shock of it? Nafakame. So Plimo falls before the shade. He's shocked before the other guy fed. Nafalu Mace, right? Now there's a reversal. Who's standing? The Satan, the Ani. It's the Satan, the Ani, who has the power. It's Plimo who was making fun of the Satan. Gira Be'eni Desidna. His guy's on the ground. So there is the total reversal. The Ani was on the ground, the Plimo was sitting up straight at the meal, and now Plimo's on the ground, and this poor person, Satan, is standing above him, and he's the guy, and not Plimo, who is falling down. Now, the Agadita concludes with a really fascinating turn. Ki chazye dehava mitztayer, when the Satan saw that Plimo was in considerable anguish, he thought the guy was dead, and now he is coming back to haunt him alive in the Beis Akisei. Okay, that's pretty scary. So he is mitztayer harbe. So what happens? Goli le nafshe. So the Satan exposes himself. Hey, I'm not this poor person. That whole thing is a figment of your imagination. I'm the Satan, the Yetzer. Amar Leh. So he said to him, that is, the Satan said to him, my time, Amrit Hachi, why did you say Gira Bani Desidna? Like, why are you bugging me? Like, why are you doing this to me? So he responds, Ve'ela Hechi Ema, what should I have said? And so he responds, Amrle Lema Mar, you should have said Rachmana Nigar Bebesata. You should have said Hashem should send eyes in the eyes of a Satan. So this is fascinating. All of a sudden, the Satan is compassionate. He's empathetic. He shows humility. He doesn't say, hey, you creep, how could you have done this? How could you have not fed me? The Satan is the hero here. He has Rachmanis on Plimo. He asks him, why did you do this? Oh, this is why I said, well, why didn't you say this? He's teaching him what to do. It's fascinating. The Yetzirah, the Satan, is a vehicle for the elevation of Plimo from the creep that he was to a person of more substance. We usually think of the Satan as being our enemy, totally. Here, our enemy, the Yetzirah, becomes a vehicle for Plimo's reform. And what does he teach him? He teaches him humility. The lesson is, not one of us sitting around this table can vanquish the Yetzirah by ourselves. We all need Hashem's help. And we say every morning in davening, we need Hashem's help. The Yetzirah can be so, and we all know from our own lives, it can be very, very powerful. I just, I'm trying to watch my weight so I don't eat too much in the way of cookies or cake, even though my office seems to provide too much of it. So there were some cookies and I was really hungry. It was the end of the day and I was exhausted. I was very tired. And there was this delicious chocolate chip cookie sitting in front of me. Yeah, no, you're really tired. You could have a piece. It's not so bad. And I'm thinking, yeah, well, anyway. I was vanquished. It's not really Yetzirah. I don't see Yetzirah, but I did not succumb. Maybe the next time I will. This time I didn't. We all know we struggle with the Yetzirah. And at the end of the day, we need Hashem's help. We just can't do it ourselves. So the ultimate lesson is exactly the reverse of what Plimo was. He was Yerub Ene the Sitna, I can vanquish the Yetzihara. And the ultimate lesson is, no, you can't. You need to fall down. You're a hypocrite. That's really the lesson. You're a total hypocrite. And the only way you can rebuild yourself is by acknowledging your own limitations, and that every single human being needs HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help to vanquish the Yetzihara. And that's true. Okay, everybody, you can go to share now. Great Gemara, isn't it?
Thank you.
Thank you.